So listen, your toilet is massively gross. Like, it's grosser than you think. In fact, bacteria and viruses can hang around in the toilet bowl even after multiple flushes. And I recently found the easiest way to clean my toilet. Blue Land Sustainable Toilet Cleaner Tablets. Just drop, watch it fizz, brush, and flush. It is truly that simple. No more scrubbing for hours. Plus, the tablets are plastic-free. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet with the same powerful clean that you're used to. Blue Land products are effective and affordable, and their toilet tablets are proven to work on a wide range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, lime scale, and hard water. And you can even get more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars, the planet, and AFC Wimbledon, the soccer team. John,
yeah.
Your birthday is coming up.
It is.
Or it just happened, as the people who are listening. And
sure.
I've got your present.
Oh.
It's a cup of dirt.
Oh, thank you so much. Why is it a cup of dirt?
Well, I just figured you'd appreciate the sediment.
Okay. Is dirt sediment?
Cup of dirt!
Is dirt sediment?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's got sediment in it.
I feel like it's... Well, you're the science.
It's got
one.
Sediment in it.
You're the science.
It's
one.
It's not. Yes.
I have a little less. I have a little less COVID.
Yeah, I can
than
tell.
I used to have. I'm not testing positive or anything. I just don't feel great. So that's
yeah,
a bit of a
you've
bummer.
Got yeah. I remember that. It took me quite a while to feel sort of back to normal. Ish.
Yeah.
Whatever normal is.
Right.
I think I'm back to normal now.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge. So what, John, I know because I share a YouTube channel account with you, but what were your favorite YouTube finds of COVID? Was it that weird medieval history one? Because you went hard on that.
I have been watching a lot of YouTube. Like, Sarah watched, like, proper television, and I was like, I'm not watching proper television. I'm not getting out of bed.
I can't do that.
I can't get out of bed. There's just no way.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can make fun all you want of my YouTube watching, but I see your shorts watching, which is way worse than my YouTube. I did get really into...
I don't get to choose!
Medieval history was really big. I did a lot of... Yeah. I did a lot of like 2 hour long medieval history. And then the other thing, which was a big discovery for me, is one of your favorite YouTube channels, Technology Connections.
It's very good.
Super enjoyable and really like changes your daily life, because now when I fill the dishwasher, I think about that process differently.
Yeah, you understand all of the thought and work that's gone into doing the things.
Yeah.
And making the things that exist. It's wild.
Yeah. It has also
how much there is.
It has also radically deepened my appreciation for the drip coffee maker, the much maligned drip coffee maker. Mm-hmm. Now that I understand it, is really a wonder of engineering. And when I drink my awesome coffee, available at awesomecoffeeclub.com, use the promo code DEARJOHN for 3 cents off your first order. When I drink my awesome coffee every morning, I'm like, this is great. This is incredible what Mr. Coffee and its clones have given us.
You've also watched a lot of soccer videos, a lot of F1 videos.
Yeah.
And a video called Weezer Cruise.
Oh, what was that it was one about the history of the Weezer Cruise. As you know, Hank, I'm fascinated by affinity cruises for people
who
share
love.
Yeah, I love
an affinity cruise. Yeah.
I don't want...
There's one for the Moody Blues called the Moody Cruise.
That's so good. I mean, that's the kind of thing where if you're the Moody Blues and you're kind of semi-retired or whatever, and somebody comes to you and you're like, I don't really want to do it, but the quality of the rhyme is so good.
But you made a great pun, so I have to.
And then I listened to a lot of I kind of was like background watching a lot because I was so miserable. I couldn't like really stare at a screen. So yeah. That meant a lot of sort of like podcasty, but video right. things like about uh-huh. history mostly. Just as a way to try to get my, I was just trying to get my brain engaged. I don't know. It was.
Or just give it something to do, you know?
Yeah.
So how did the Weezer cruise go? Was it all right?
Yeah. I mean, that was the weird thing. I watched this like 16-minute video and the main subject of it was like trying to make fun of Weezer. But the main subject of the video was like, Weezer did like 8 concerts in 4 days and they really took good care of their fans. Nerds. And I was like,
that's great.
It seems like it was pretty good. Like, it seems like I don't know much about Weezer. I've only heard one of their songs, so I don't have an opinion. I don't know what the current situation with Weezer is. Like, but from that video, which was trying to make fun of Weezer, my main takeaway was seems like they were pretty nice.
Seems like a successful cruise. I kind of wish I was there. I don't care much about Weezer, but that sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds
great.
Like it was a pretty fun, like, five-day trip.
Well, I just had a wild idea.
Nope.
This is not for someone.
I can't handle the idea of a Nerdfighter cruise, not because I can't handle the idea of a Nerdfighter cruise, but mostly because I can't handle the idea of a cruise.
Of a cruise, yeah. So here's what you do.
Okay.
Listener, uh-huh. not you, John.
Okay.
You go on an affinity cruise for a thing that you've never heard
yes.
of. Like, a lot of you have never heard of the Moody Blues. I guarantee there's a bunch of people out there unaware of the Moody Blues. Go on the Moody cruise mm-hmm. or what have you. Go on the affinity cruise and just see, just like ethnography it. Just be like, where am I? What am I in the midst of?
Yeah.
And at the end, are you a fan of the Moody Blues? Because I think 99% chance.
You will be.
You are a lifetime fan of the Moody Blues.
Right. I would argue that really you should only go on affinity cruises precisely to find something new to love and people to connect
over
it. Well,
and all the other cruise stuff is already there.
Yeah.
You still get to do the cruise stuff.
There's still a water feature.
But I also think you shouldn't go on an affinity cruise for a thing you have an affinity for. You got to pick something and just like... You are going to dive head first. Like, this is like immersion language learning, but for the Moody Blues. You're going to know so much. So much Moody content.
But what if like Moody Blues fans are huge gatekeepers and you get there and they're like, oh, you've only heard, I can't name a Moody Blues song. You've only heard the Sweater song.
Me either.
You suck. We hate you. And then you're just sort of outcast for 5 days, like you're shunned by Moody Blues enthusiasts.
This is the thing. I think that there is no chance that there's an affinity cruise out there that one will not just assume that you're in. Like, they will just assume they're not gonna quiz you. They'll assume you're in, and you'll just be in. You gotta maybe like do a little studying beforehand.
Yeah.
But second.
No,
I think
you have to be radically honest. I think when people are like, hey, what was your first?
And they will love that
that's the thing.
They will be so happy.
That's the thing, Hank, is that
they'll bring you in. You'll be the most popular person on the cruise.
The hardest core Moody Blues fans aren't gatekeepers because they're confident.
No, exactly.
They're confident in their fandom.
Uh-huh.
They don't have to tell you you're not a real AFC Wimbledon fan if you didn't go to a game in 1986 because they know in their hearts that they are Moody Blues fans. And so there's there's nothing else to it. And that is what's so beautiful about the idea of an affinity cruise. Imagine going on the Moody cruise, Hank, and you're seated.
Oh my, this would be such a good YouTube
you're
video.
You're seated next to a bald-haired man with long hair. You know what I mean? He's got the horseshoe, but it's long hair. And he looks at you and he's like, hey man, when was your first Moody Blues concert? And you're like, it's about to happen. He's going to be so psyched. He's going to be like, hell yes. Hell yes.
I have decided that whatever you're into is what I'm into with some limits.
This is the best idea we've ever had.
Which I absolutely will not do and do not want to do. I really want to watch the YouTube video of the person going on something like, it doesn't have to be the Moody Cruise, but something like that where they just have no idea what it is and you're just going to be immersed in the culture.
I want to
do a straight ethnography. As long as you're like open and accepting about it.
I want to
like,
do I don't it want you, like, so bad.
If you make fun of these people, I'll be so mad. All right, John's in. John's doing it. He hates cruises, but he's going to do it.
All right, hold on.
I will pay you money.
All right, I'm really struggling here to find a list of
affinity cruises. Yeah, especially because there's a cruise company in New Zealand called Affinity Cruises.
That is hurting me. What would you call an Affinity Cruise if not?
I don't know. Did you just make that up?
I did.
That's great.
I've invented a genre. Yeah. Okay, themed cruises. This is just Royal Caribbean. All right, it's like country music, jam rock. Mm-hmm. Star Trek The Cruise.
Ooh. John doesn't care very much about Star Trek, and I really want him to.
All right. Star Trek The Cruise.
I'm not going on the biker cruise. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Here's the 65 best themed cruises.
All right.
Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. I'm going to pass on that one. I'm going to pass on professional wrestling cruises.
Okay.
Meow Meow Cruise, a cruise for cat lovers. I feel like that's too broad. Oh, too broad.
Yep.
Star Trek The Cruise is on the list. The Kiss Cruise.
The Kiss Cruise
number 9. Happening.
They've been doing it for 9 times?
Uh-huh. Imagine being the only person who's at their first Kiss Cruise.
Wait, what are their names? They're the guys with the paint, right?
Well, I thought they were the guys with the paint, but I'm looking at a picture of them now, and they're not wearing painted faces at the Kiss Cruise. Maybe that's
you know,
when they don't
wear I think
wear
that that's the
makeup.
Right call.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's just, we're all ourselves here. This is where we're going to be ourselves. We're not going to have our face paint melting off in the Caribbean sun.
Right. I think that.
There's also the Ultimate Disco Cruise.
Yeah. To me, that's too broad. I don't want, like...
Well, it's specific. It's Cool in the Gang, Sister Sledge, Billy Ocean. Those are the headliners.
I almost don't want it to be music. Like, there's a...
Well, professional wrestling it is, John.
Ooh, there's a...
There's a knitting cruise.
There's a Golden Girls cruise. There's a golden... What? A cruise for Golden Girl enthusiasts where there are 3 women who cosplay as the Golden Girls.
That's the whole thing? And that's enough for a cruise?
It's all Golden Girls all the time. It's the Golden Girls cruise.
John, you would be the most popular person at the on the Golden Girls cruise. There's no doubt in my mind.
I could finally feel famous.
It's coming back in 2023.
Ooh, might have to go.
I will pay you.
I mean, here's what I'll say, Hank.
We're going to crowdfund it.
I can afford to pay my way onto the Golden Girls cruise. That's like, and also I'm not somebody who gets excited about getting paid. I mean, you'd have to pay me so much money to go on the Golden Girls cruise for it to be like worth it for my financial perspective.
Yeah.
But, there's...
It departs from Miami, the fictional home of Blanche Devereaux. So that's very specific.
There used to be a NASCAR The Cruise, but they stopped doing it during COVID. All right. I think this has gone on too long is my first thought about this bit. But I think the ones I want to keep on the list are Star Trek and Golden Girls.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Sorry, John, if I wasn't paying attention to you, I was reading all about Golden Fans at Sea, which is the name of the Golden Girls cruise.
Wow.
Anyway, it's up to you. You get to decide. And now we're going to answer some questions for our listeners because it's been a little bit of time that we started for this thing.
All right. Our first question comes from Callista, who writes, how often does the moon go around the earth in a day? I tried to look it up and just got confused. Most people I ask say once a day, but you could tell me twice a day and I would have no choice but to believe you. Confused, Callista.
Yes, you go.
That the moon goes around the earth.
Yes.
Once every lunar month.
That's right.
Oh, thank God. I was not positive.
which is not the exact same as a month, unfortunately. No. And the moon doesn't care about how about the year. The moon doesn't care about the day.
Indeed, the moon does not know about the year.
It's true. But I just mean that there's no connection between the length of a day and the length of a lunar month.
Right, in the same way that we don't...
A year and a lunar month.
In the same way that we don't contextualize the movement of the sun around the center of the Milky Way very often.
Right, exactly. But it feels like maybe there should be some relationship between the number of days in a year and the year.
Right.
That we think, like, there's 365 of these in a year.
Right.
But there isn't. There's 365 point number out to infinity.
Right.
And that number changes, which is wild.
But also, well, it changes very slightly, yes. But
it's changed a lot.
Right.
Over the course of time, like the day used to be hours shorter, and in millions of years from now, we'll have 25-hour day.
Right.
Like
it's weird.
It's weird.
It's very weird. But then the oceans will boil, and that will be even weirder. So
that's way further.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if we're talking in long timescales, what do you think the chances are that there will be a human around to witness the 25-hour day?
Well, what I can say for sure, John, is that the Earth will still be turning.
We don't know.
So that's
something. We don't know that. We definitely don't know that.
Is a million years is a long time. I don't know what kind of shenanigans we'll get up to trying to slow up or speed down the Earth. But I do think that we will have a hard time affecting it.
It's not that we won't try. It's just that we aren't big enough.
I mean, there actually are people who want to do that to Venus. They want to speed up Venus because it rotates very slowly. And so if you like hit a bunch of like ice asteroids into Venus in like the same direction, you could theoretically speed it up.
Yeah, just get it spinning. Once it's spinning, it'll stay spinning. I know about that from science.
That's true.
So, that's true. All right.
Well, that's the situation.
So it's every 20...
But it looks like it goes around us once a day because we spin once a day, and right. It stays in the same place while we spin. It doesn't stay exactly in the same place. It's very slightly different. I think it's... I don't actually know which way it is. I think it's slightly longer because it's moving in the sky while we are spinning.
But this is... But this gets to something that's quite interesting, which is the way that lots of people measure time is by... the moon, not by
rather than the sun.
There is no reason why we have to have a solar year instead of a lunar year. And other calendars, lots of other human calendars, including the Islamic calendar, use lunar years, which is why, for instance, the month of Ramadan, the month of fasting in Islam, the month of Ramadan moves around the seasons because it's a lunar calendar, not a solar calendar. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, it's...
I did not know that.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, now we've both learned something. I've learned that my guess was right, and you've learned that Ramadan is sometimes in winter and sometimes in summer. And also, whether, of course, it's in winter or summer depends on whether you're in the northern or southern hemisphere, which is something...
Which is true for all of the things.
...that northern hemisphere people often forget.
There's that whole hemisphere down there. I mean, in fairness to Northern Hemisphere people, we're most of us.
Every time somebody in Australia is like, it's so cold in July, I'm like, huh? What's it like down there?
It is legit weird that 90% of people live on the top half of the planet.
Well, there's more land. There's more land up here.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's more land up here.
Yeah, and even the phrase, there's more land up here, right, implies that the northern hemisphere is above the southern hemisphere, which it's not in any kind of real way.
Yes, but there has to be, you have to have a representation of the Earth, and something has to be on top, and people who are like, it's arbitrary, I'm like, is it, or are 90% of us up here?
Yeah.
Like, if you were going to do it one of the two ways, which you have to.
Right.
This makes sense.
Indeed, in penguin maps, the southern hemisphere is always above, I've noticed.
Yes, because 100% of the penguins live in the southern hemisphere.
No.
Yes.
No.
They've never crossed. They can't get up there. It gets too hot for
them. First off, Hank, I know for a fact you're wrong because I've seen the penguins in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Second, I know you're wrong because I've seen the movie Penguins of Madagascar, where there are penguins in Venice.
You're right.
And there are penguins all over the dang place.
Oh, you're right. There are a number of penguins that don't cross, but you're right. You're right.
Hank, I would think that as the science one, you would be above such inaccurate...
I was wrong!
...anti-biology statements.
Yeah. John, you're the penguin expert. You've watched that Penguins of Madagascar movie like 8 million times.
And you are correct.
I'm so glad that you caught me.
You're correct.
My fallibility has been discovered.
You're definitely correct that watching the film Penguins of Madagascar makes you an expert in the field of penguins. I basically have a PhD in penguinology.
Works. John, do you know who Tom McGrath is?
Don't think so.
Well, then you can't be that much of an expert because he's Skipper and Penguins of Madagascar.
Okay. Yeah. Penguins of Madagascar was one of the last great animated movies where all the characters were not played by like fancy actors. They were just played by
some
people.
Of them were.
I know. John Malkovich plays Dave.
Yeah.
My God, that must have been an amazing phone call. The phone call where John Malkovich's agents pitched him the villain in the forthcoming DreamWorks animation movie, Penguins of Madagascar. And John Malkovich was like,
absolutely.
I'll probably do it. And then they were like, Werner Herzog is doing a cameo in the first 5 minutes. And he would have been like, oh, yeah, no, then we're good. I'll do it. Oh, man. God, what? But who are we kidding? I mean, there's literally nothing I wouldn't do for money.
Oh, I would be in a DreamWorks pick so fast.
Oh, my God. You wouldn't even have to pay me.
Oh, my God.
For me to be in Penguins of Madagascar 2, like...
SAG minimum, got to support the union.
Yeah,
but other than that...
Right, yeah. SAG minimum.
Well, this next question comes from Ainsley, who asks, Dear Hank and John, it's 4 a.m. and there's a moth slamming itself again and again across my kitchen ceiling. This little guy's going at it with reckless abandon, and their dustiness makes the impact shockingly loud. I'm not sure what their dustiness has to do that. But Ainsley wants to know, is this moth okay? Does he have a sense of pain? Are bugs all right? This is a level one emergency, Ainsley.
No, the moth is not okay.
The moth is stuck inside.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but like the moth is never okay, right? Like from the time that the moth becomes a moth, life is brief and full of danger.
It's true.
So
moth is never okay, especially when my cat is around. My cat will eat a dozen moths.
There you go.
In like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
He is a remarkably efficient moth eater.
Yeah.
But yeah, if the moth is never okay, does that mean I am never okay?
Correct.
Oh.
So moving on, we have this question from Justin.
Devoki did a bunch of research insect injury, which does happen. They can.
Great.
Apparently, well, we have determined through science that insects can get brain injuries. Probably the moth is not giving itself a brain injury, though, because it's doing this on its own, and it's doing it, I would assume, in the safer way. And as for whether insects feel pain, they feel something when their bodies are injured. And we don't know what that is because we've never been an insect, but they feel something, and that makes scientists call that thing pain when they're talking about it. Though probably not when they're talking about it in scientific papers. But it's hard to not call that pain.
It's
when there's like a clear nervous signal being sent because of injury. So the moth is never okay.
Great.
Rescue the moth or feed it to your cat.
Yeah, try to get the moth outside so that it can be not okay in its preferred environment.
Yeah.
This next question comes from Kaylee, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I work at a paint store. How do I not cry every time a customer is awfully rude to me for no reason? I get that maybe they're having a bad day, but then they're mean to me and make me have a bad day, and I'm just a humble paint store employee, not selling acrylic paint, K Haley?
I had I was at the DMV recently, and there was a woman who was being mean, and all of the people at the DMV were visibly distressed about this. Like, there was no one in the building who was not having a aware of and experiencing a negative emotion. And then the woman like very nearly fell to her knees crying. And then everything changed in a very different direction. And it was just clear that, like, this person didn't know which emotion to have, and it was in a situation that she did not know what to do about. Now, at the paint store, that seems a little less likely than at the DMV, where, like, maybe you do need this thing in order to get a lot of your, like, normal life done. But the way that I saw them respond in that moment made me feel really good about the people at the DMV. And they all started, like, everybody became human again. And that I think is a thing that is missing.
Yeah.
In the way that people, seems like more now than ever, are treating the folks who are paid to help them out.
It does seem like more now than ever. And I don't mean that in, like, an old man yells at cloud kind of way. I mean it in when I talk to people whose jobs involve interacting with customers, it seems to them like more now than ever.
Yeah.
And I think that may speak to a shared underlying level of fear and anxiety and discomfort that then expresses itself that way. But when you're experiencing that, when someone is yelling at you about paint, and you're like, I work at the paint store, I am doing my best, and I am adhering to our regulations as a paint store, it's very, very difficult not to let that negatively impact your day. And honestly, Kaylee, I would cry. I would just start crying and be like, well,
yeah,
there you did it. You got it. Is that what you wanted? Did you want to have to realize that I'm a person? Because now you have to deal with that.
I guess.
But it's hard. I remember
it's a terrible situation to be in. Yeah. It makes so much sense that people, like, fewer people are choosing those kinds of jobs. And
they're really, really hard jobs. They usually don't pay very well.
When they can choose them.
And if people aren't nice to you, then I sometimes found it helpful when I was in those situations to think of the person who was yelling at me as being very afraid, very like feeling that they were going to lose something that was important to them or have something taken away that was important to them. They're going to lose a client. They're going to whatever. They're going to get sick. Like, that's what I would tell myself. But it's very hard because the truth is, like, that's a lot of times, that's certainly not why they think they're angry, you know?
Yeah. What did Ryan Reynolds tell us about conflict resolution? He said that you have to tell them what they just said to you back.
Yeah, you just repeat it back. So this really is like a cheat code in life. It's ever since Ryan Reynolds told us about it, I use it all the time.
It works really well on Oren.
It's incredibly effective. It's like incredibly effective with kids, with everybody.
It also lets me know for sure whether I'm actually understanding the problem right.
Exactly. So if you repeat
it's actually useful for me as well.
So if you repeat it back and you say, so your concern is that you bought oil paint and you needed acrylic paint. Is that correct? Or do I have it? And they're like, yeah. And then you say, is there more? Is there something else? Or do I have all of it? And they're like, you have all of it. And then once you really understand it, and if you can try to empathize and say, oh, wow, like if I thought that I was buying acrylic paint and I bought oil paint, like I would definitely be frustrated. And I absolutely understand why you're frustrated. What can I do to help? Because I didn't buy the wrong kind of paint. That's a you problem. But you don't say that part out loud.
Yeah, you probably don't say that part.
Validate and empathize, I think, But that,
yeah,
I mean, that's
but
what
it,
you should,
it does. It,
but you also need to be able to go to your favorite podcasters or your second favorite podcasters. Kaylee, I don't want to make guesses for you. You also need to be able to go to your favorite podcasters and say, like, this sucks and it makes me cry. Like,
yeah.
And have that feeling validated, because it does.
Well, it's
suck.
Very weird to have people just be mean to you.
Yeah.
In life.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't happen all that often. And for good reason, because, like, we're people and we in general are made uncomfortable by that. And so we know what it's like to have people do that to us. And so we don't do it. And it's so frustrating.
And if you're a normal person, when you do it, you think about it. Like, it haunts you. I'll give you an example. We got off a plane flying to Hawaii, and everybody in the airport line was pretty mean. It was a pretty unpleasant experience. Mm. I was really tired. Mm-hmm. And then the car wasn't, like, the car that we'd, like, hired wasn't already there.
Yeah.
And we called them, and they're like, oh, yeah, he's on his way. He's like 10 minutes out. And then, like, 10 minutes later, we called them again. And I was super frustrated, not being my best self. Really, really not being my best self.
Yeah.
Finally, a guy comes, and I'm, like, huffing and puffing and annoyed. I'm not, like, yelling at anybody or making anybody cry, hopefully. But, like, I'm clearly annoyed. And the guy's like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like, I had this really challenging client who, like, changed the delivery place on me twice. And I feel really bad because I'm such a huge fan. And I was like, oh, no, he heard me huffing and puffing. And he didn't do anything wrong. He's just trying to do his job.
It's a world that is like, yeah. I have to remind myself whenever I can how convenient things are.
Right.
And when they are inconvenient, yeah. Like, being frustrated about that. And that's another thing that, like, it feels like a thing just changed where people expected a level of convenience that became less available.
That's so true.
And that, like, it's just such a silly thing to expect that level of convenience, especially during a pandemic. And then also especially during an economic downturn or, like, supply chain disruptions. It's a complicated world that's going to have inconveniences.
That's so true.
I just wish that there was, like, some, like, public service announcement on TV that's just like, everything's going to be a little harder now.
Well, and also, like, everything's going to be a little hard forever, because systems that involve humans involve humans, and you're a moth and, like, you're a mammal.
It's never okay.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. You're never okay, and nobody you're ever talking to is ever all the way okay, because we're not machines. Kaylee is not a paint machine. Kaylee is a person. And that I think might be part of the issue. We need to, like, understand the extent to which humans participate in all of our systems, even the ones that work hard to make the human invisible.
Which reminds me, John, that this podcast is brought to you by the moth. The moth. It is never okay.
Today's podcast is also brought to you by John Malkovich's agent. John Malkovich's agent. Making awkward phone calls to John Malkovich since 1978.
This podcast is also brought to you by Golden Fans at Sea. If you want to get your tickets to Golden Fans at Sea, it's in 2023, and John might be there.
And today's podcast is brought to you by The Lunar Year. The lunar year. It's just another kind of year.
It's just another kind of year.
We also have a project for Awesome Message Hank. It's from Asher to Isabel. Today's podcast is also brought to you by the concept of cooler younger sisters, who, among other things, can always be relied upon when you need a second person for a bit. For example, the world's best or worst dad joke first aired in 1959 to be said at the end of any explanation. And that's our plan of attack.
It looks like a nail.
Nope, it's attack. All right, we did it, Asher and Isabel.
Asher gave us lines.
I love it.
If you get a Project for Awesome message in the 2023 Project for Awesome and you don't give us lines now, you're underperforming.
No, don't feel obligated to give us lines, but we are always happy to have lines when they are given.
Yeah, that's great.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. Let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, limescale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, that's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be, dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
So listen, y'all, you've heard me tell a lot of stories about Policy Genius over the years. Policy Genius, just to be clear, is not an insurance company. It's a marketplace that helps people find and buy insurance. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. So I know we talk a lot about death on this podcast, and then we use that talk about death to talk about Policy Genius. But for real, for serious, you probably need life insurance, and Policy Genius is a great place to get it. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Policy Genius, because you will leave behind people who love and need you. That's not their tagline, but, you know, I like it.
All right, Hank, before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, let's answer a couple more questions, beginning with this one from Emily. Dear John and Hank, when's the last time you had a good cry? Blushing and blubbering, Emily.
Oh, gosh. Well, I definitely know the answer to this question.
What was it for you?
Well, my friend died last week, and so that was several times, but we went to his memorial this weekend, and everybody had a good cry.
Yeah.
There was lots of big good cries.
Yeah. I'm really sorry for your loss and for Missoula's loss. This was the mayor of Missoula, Montana for the last 15 years, and just a deeply beloved figure who really personified public service.
Yeah. I mean, I just like, you know, obviously nobody's perfect or anything, but, the way that he handled, being one of the speakers referred to him as a street mayor, that he was just, he was always somewhere nearby and he was always talking to people. And I just think that, like, you know, there's so much to learn from leaders who don't make splashes, you know, who aren't like out there a big, like being talked about all the time, but are just doing the work. And So it was very touching to hear from all of his colleagues and friends. And also, like, it had been a long time since I've been to any kind of service, and I'm in a different stage of my life now than I was the last time I went to a funeral or memorial. And it felt different as a person who is solidly middle-aged now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and his death is much closer to the death of a peer than it is to like the death of a
always,
parent or a grandparent.
Yes, always previous, but yes, it's very true. Previous funerals had been from people who were well, in very different generations from me and very different life stages, whereas John was 58. And like in the middle of his career in many ways.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. For me, it's been a while because the medication I take now makes me not cry as much. But it was during the Turtles All the Way Down movie. The last night of the Turtles All the Way Down movie, it like ended at 5 a.m. And coming home from that, I had a nice, nice long cry.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I got another question, John.
Yep.
In a very different vein from Connor, who asks, dear Hank and John, what is the animal version of the word humanity? Do we just add itty to the end of the animal
like
name?
Penguinidity?
Penguinidity, doggity, pelicanity. Pelicanity works, doggity doesn't.
Yeah,
how is this supposed to work? Pumpkinity and penguinity, Connor.
So usually my understanding is that it's got to be ITY or ITE. Right?
That's not. I think that the answer is right there and you're just not there yet.
Is it animal?
No, cuz it's you got to have like a collective
animality.
So like all dogs together. No, just the dogs individuals, not all animals, just dogs. What is their so like their version of humanity? So like we have humanity, all people together.
Right.
All dogs together. You're not going to it's not like a pack. That's just a small group of dogs.
Right.
We're talking all dogs. It's dog kind.
Oh, right. Humankind. We used to say mankind all the time in English.
Yeah, we really did. Yeah.
And then I remember like the first time I read Humankind, I think it might have been like later Kurt Vonnegut. And I was like, what? Humankind?
Humankind.
But of course, like that is a far, far better term for humankind.
Yeah.
It sounded weird, but it was correct.
And now it doesn't sound weird anymore. Can you believe it?
Wow, it's amazing how that happens with language over and over and over again. And every single time it happens, and, people act as if it won't happen.
Yeah. And boy, it's going to be, people are going to hate it. It's the end of everything. Yep. I can't believe. And if I accidentally say mankind, they're going to string me up and my career will be over.
Yeah.
No, it'll just be like, oh, it's probably better if you say humankind.
Yeah. Dog kind.
So dog kind.
Animal
but I
kind.
Think pelicanity.
But I think pelicanity, you, I think is, pelicanity fine. Is fine. I think if it ends in an an, like human.
Yeah, or an N at all.
Yeah, maybe. Like, what's another
animal
that
works
ends
too.
In N? I mean, like there's like a, the bird, a wren. I wouldn't say renity to describe wrens.
No, you're right.
But
and I wouldn't say chickenanity. I would say chickanity.
Chickanity.
Chickanity?
Chickanity or I might say chicken kind.
Chicken kind. But I would say raccoonanity.
Oh, there's nothing. I mean, raccoonanity is the way that raccoons refer to themselves. Hank, can I tell you an incredible...
Raccoonanity also sounds like what they get up to.
Can I tell you an incredible story of raccoonanity? Incredible. Yeah. I can't believe we've saved it for the end of the pod.
Oh, I can't believe we just invented raccoonanity.
So Sarah and I have like an outdoor sink and grill. And the other day, Sarah came inside and she was like, why did you leave the sink on all night? And I said, I didn't. And she said, yes, you did. It's on. And I was like, definitely didn't because I have COVID. And so I wasn't outside. Like I think I have the ultimate defense. I was not
you
out.
You think I woke up and went somewhere?
I was not outdoors yesterday. And Sarah's like, well, why is the faucet on? I was like, well, the kids did it. And she was like, I don't think they did. I don't think they could have. And I was like, well, let's go look. We go out there and there's freaking raccoon paws leading all the way up to the sink. And then the sink is still on. And I was like, obviously a raccoon walked up, turned the sink on, washed its hands, and then didn't turn the sink off because why would it? It's raccoonanity.
Yeah. Yes. They performed raccoonanity upon you.
Yes. We got, yeah, I believe that's called being raccoonanited. It's not raccoonity. It's raccoonanity. We're sure about this.
Yeah.
We have one chance.
It's got to be raccoonanity.
Raccoonity, if we prefer it. But I think it's raccoonanity.
Look, maybe raccoonity is all raccoon kind, but raccoonanity is what all raccoon kind gets up to.
Yes. Raccoonity is all raccoons together, and raccoonanity is the behavior of raccoonity.
I want to be in a band called Raccoonanity. We're going to have so much fun on that stage.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yes. Just, you're like...
One thing that there definitely is amphibian...
You're like Kiss, but for raccoons. You wear, like, raccoon makeup at all your shows.
Yeah.
Your hardcore fans dress up as raccoons.
There's a future where they make it and we don't. And in that case...
I mean, I'd say it's 90-10 in favor of raccoons. And they are the most likely species, I think, just given their hand shape, to achieve sentience.
Yeah, they got a lot going for them, for sure. They're walking around on two legs sometimes.
Yep.
They wash their hands.
Yep.
You know, they know it's a pandemic. They're being careful out there.
They heard that I had COVID, and so they ran to the sink. They were like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Jeez. Oh, jeez.
You know, the guy who lives in that house, he's got the COVID.
Don't touch the handle again. Just leave it on.
Why would we turn it off? Raccoons don't pay the water bill.
Raccoonanity. Looking out for number one.
Oh, all right, Hank. This week in AFC Wimbledon news. AFC Wimbledon went 2-0 up in a football game for the third consecutive time. And universally, the response among AFC Wimbledon fans was, oh, no, what fresh hell is this? I've never seen a group of people be less excited about a 2-0 lead. It was just universally immediate. The moment the second goal went in, which was a really good free kick by Ethan Chislett, and the first goal was by Nathan Young-Coombs, NYC... The moment that second goal went in, every Wimbledon fan, you could see it in the crowd. Every fan was like, oh, no, not this again. But maybe because our opponents, Crawley Town, are really, really terrible. Or maybe because they got a 55th minute red card.
Oh, but, wow.
We managed to secure a 2-0 victory.
They got a 55th minute red card and you didn't score again?
No, but I think, to be fair, the AFC Wimbledon players might have been under, like, team orders not to shoot the ball under any circumstances.
Just
kill time.
Yeah.
It truly felt like AFC Wimbledon manager Johnny Jackson had said to the boys, if we get a 2-0 lead... You will not concede a goal. I don't care what else happens. You will not concede a goal.
Yeah. And, I want you to take the football, put it in your mouth, and swallow it.
There were so many times where, like, one of the younger players, like, tried to, like, take a free kick or something. And one of the old players, usually Chris Gunter, would take his hands and, like, lower the temperature. He would be like, shh, calm. We got to calm down. There is no rush here. So we held on to our 2-0 lead, which I think was the whole job. And now we have won a second game in 2022, League Two game, which is great news. And we are in 10th place in League Two, which is not half bad. What's the news from
Mars?
I'm
getting used to typing League Two table to see the table instead of League One table.
It takes a little while to get used to.
It's a shift.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well,
I will say this, this guy, Nathan Young-Coombs, who is on loan from Brentford, he's scored 3 goals so far, which is, I think, as many goals as any of our strikers scored last season. So it's good.
Well, this week in Mars news, John, you know what would be nice? is if we could grow food on Mars. And that's what scientists are trying to figure out. So they've tried a whole bunch of different crops in various crops in basically trying to figure out Mars-like soil. Doesn't have any organic carbon in it. So that's, you know, trickier for plants. Doesn't have the other nutrients that would be created by living stuff on Earth. According to researchers, the winner is alfalfa. It's kind of too bad, but it's food. So not only were researchers able to grow a small crop of alfalfa in their version of Martian soil, they also crushed that crop into powder to make it into fertilizer that could then be used to grow more complex crops like turnips. Still not great news. But like better.
So if we, so for like 12 years, we're going to have to grow lots of alfalfa on Mars, crush it up, and then
have a turnip party.
We can grow some turnips. Alfalfa and turnips seem like just not, I mean, I've never wanted to go to Mars, but now I really don't.
Yeah. Well, don't worry, John. There's another option. They also found that they could use marine cyanobacteria called Cyanococcus PCC7002.
People say that's the best one.
they could actually use that to desalinate water, which would be useful on Mars because it has very briny water. So going forward, researchers want to see how other crops, maybe some better ones, fare in the soil. They'll also need to find a way to deal with the fact that Martian soils have perchlorates in them, which kill things from Earth, including people.
Oh, yikes.
Perchlorates might be the biggest problem about going to Mars. And
seems like a big problem.
Yeah, it's not clear how universal they are, but they seem, if they are universal, it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, that seems like a huge issue.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is a huge issue. So the good news is that maybe by the time 2028 rolls around, we'll all be robots that live inside computers.
I mean, I think that seems like the easiest way, right? Like there is a part of me that's like, it seems a really hard to like reverse engineer a planet for these, this particular organism.
Seems like it might be easier to just do the person.
Right.
Yeah. People are smaller than planets. They're complicated though. It's all quite tough.
I agree with that analysis. But it's great to know that we could grow alfalfa, which we could then turn into turnips. All right, Hank, thank you for potting with me, and thanks to everybody for listening. You can email us your questions. We promise we'll answer more next time at hankandjohn@gmail.com.
We're off to record our Patreon-only podcast, This Week in Stuff, where we talk about things that we liked this week. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget
to be awesome.